I think that's happening to us down there. We're getting cured on Saturday, and a lot of us aren't noticing it till Monday, and I think a lot of you aren't. As a little personal postscript on that, I have a lot of people on this trip running around and a lot of publicity and stuff where I'm supposed to be very fearless and living a life of danger and of social ostracism and everything else because I don't string along with what has been a majority opinion in such matters. As a matter of fact, in the 3.5 years since I got out of the Army, far from being out of things, I've had to be on everything from school boards, library boards, church, vestry, Boy Scout councils, and everything else until I wish I could be ostracized at least for 6 months in a year and do a little more newspaper work. And as for the physical danger, which makes very good newspaper copy in Cleveland or something, in the 13 years I've been in that town, I've actually had, two fist fights, and one fellow wanted to shoot me. It wasn't about a racial issue, and that's, for any newspaper man in any small town, is a good, safe record. Lastly, I haven't been saying these things simply as a matter of sectional pride or just simple hopefulness. There's more to it than that, a couple of reasons that I'd like you to think about with me. First is that this thing we call a Southern problem, this attitude of race toward race, is not now actually a Southern problem, and it's going to become less and less one for a very tragic reason. And it is this: up until the present, the migration of the Negro from the South has been voluntary. He has left because he resented treatment there, or because the opportunity elsewhere was greater. But now a thing is happening in the South that is going to replace or make that voluntary migration secondary to a forced migration. The mechanization of the largely agricultural South is proceeding at a pace that is terrifying to us who wonder about the human equation involved. Government men who are concerned with these things in agriculture have estimated that within the next 8 years, that of the South's roughly 9 million Negroes, at least 5 million are going to be displaced. They cannot be absorbed in this new mechanization. We don't have the industry to absorb them. And so these groups of hopeless, almost helpless people who have been being replaced and discarded not because of anger or tension, but by what always happens, mechanical displacement, are going to become not just our problem. They're not going to stay there. They're moving out now because there's no place, and they're coming up here. They're coming all over the United States, so that you will have to wrestle and search your souls and your legal codes and a great many other things to try to find a way out together. So what has been of primarily our concern will be the concern of all of us. And the second thing is this, that the South has largely suffered primarily by this identification throughout the country as the land of the Claghorn and the Ku Kluxer and the brutal white man and the underprivileged Negro. We've been suffered as a matter of sectional pride and a few other economic results. But the true victim in that one-sided, continuously one-sided presentation of the South is not the South, but the nation at large. We hear on the one hand that the South and the nation should end its intolerance because it affords a ready tool for communist Russia to use against us. But on the other side of the coin is that this one-sided presentation of an important and large area of our country as simply the land of the lyncher and the bigot is being just as effective in providing a weapon for those whose ideology is different from my own. And it would seem to me that some of our national leaders would realize this, that some of our organs of public opinion, some of our politicians would realize this. It would seem that the Southern press as a whole, non-Southern press as a whole, would try to balance the bad with the good that is being accomplished, if only as a matter of self-defense against its use as propaganda. I know that the violent, the lynchings and so on, are the stuff of which headlines are made. But we've got far more pressing objectives today, it seems to me, than the creating of vivid headlines or the making of sectional scapegoats. For the good of all of us in this seemingly unending struggle that is going on in the world today, the balanced story of my part of the country, which is a part of your country too, had better be told by all of us, by our government and its own propaganda, by our newspapers and magazines, by our political spokesmen. For in creating and perpetuating the Southern stereotype that now exists in reporting only the worst that comes from my part of the country, we are actually helping to drive 1.5 billion brown and yellow and black men into the camp of the communists who can hang us with our own words. And this thing, it seems to me, is a whole lot bigger than any of us, certainly bigger than our pride down in Mississippi, bigger than a matter of debate between sections. Today, as this world does enter this final fateful struggle between the spirit of freedom, which is still a goal and not a realization, and the power of the police state, we can't afford in this country to be narrowly political or ignorant one of the other. Thank you very much.
We'll take just a very brief 30-second intermission to give you time to organize your questions about Senator Bilbo and to let Mr. Carter catch his breath. I might say that in the meanwhile, our next convocation lecture is 2 weeks from tonight. Merle Miller, associate editor of Harper's, will speak on What's Wrong with American Magazines.